And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And for the next hour, we will bring you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news for Friday, November 20th, 2020. Hello, Dave. Maybe Dave isn't there. We were having some technical problems getting him started, and he just sent me a note. Not sure if Todd sees that. But in the meantime, while they are communicating, I'll just go ahead and get into the market reports, and we'll bring Dave on when he gets here. So, gold today. We had gold today up $7.10. At $1,874. Silver was up 17 pennies at $24.30. Platinum was down a dollar at $955. Palladium was down $4 at $2,346. The USDX today was up 0.08 at 92.39. Crude oil was up 43 cents at $42.17. And the paper markets today, we have the Dow down 187 points at 29,295. The NASDAQ, let me repeat that, the Dow is down 29,263. The NASDAQ is down 49 points at 11,854. I'm getting distracted by the texts that are going back and forth. That's okay, folks. The S&P was down 24 at 3,557. I really can walk and chew gum at the same time. I promise you I can. But read and talk are two different things. So when you're trying to read, two different things and talk. But anyway, the 10-year yield is 0.83%. And Japan was down 0.42%. Hong Kong, Germany, London were sort of unchanged overnight. So not a whole lot going on. And so we'll just continue until we get some sort of a connection with Dave. And it would be better off if they texted me on my phone to let me know what is going on. But so we'll go ahead and get started. And thank you for your patience, ladies and gentlemen. We touched on this a little bit yesterday about the Treasury and several of the Fed crisis programs. The move drew a swift rebuke from the Fed. They want to continue the programs. Among those that Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin asked the Fed to continue for another 90 days are programs that provided the short-term commercial paper loans to businesses, as well as another for money market. We talked about that. Mnuchin also asked for other programs that were supported by the Treasury capital come to an end for now. And the two programs were the ones that bought corporate bonds, as well as the Main Street Lending Program that targeted towards small and medium-sized businesses, but never really got off the ground. And these programs are set to expire anyway at the end of the year, so I don't know what the rush is to stop them, you know, 30 days prior. They were instituted in early March, of course, to open markets that had froze during the panic selling that had occurred. So, and the Fed said it would prefer that the full suite of emergency facilities established during the pandemic continue. And, you know, what's interesting is I'm not quite sure. I mean, here the Fed promises the market, and it doesn't disturb the markets at all. It's interesting because here the Fed is promising Wall Street that they will be there for their needs, and now you have DC coming in, Treasury Secretary coming in and saying no. So is it because they want to have a negative impact on the stock market? I don't know. I'm just asking. Since the stock market is such a barometer of a good economy, and we have heard many times out of D.C. all about the records that that Wall Street is making. So why would the government, the Treasury, want to end these programs before it's time? And again, only 30 days. So not sure what's going on between the Treasury and the Fed. And you would think it would have had a bigger impact on the stock market. But maybe we'll see something heading into Thanksgiving Day weekend or week next week. I don't know if that had something to do with it or not. Mnuchin also said this morning that he and senior GOP lawmakers are going to attempt to draft a targeted stimulus package with Democrats in the coming weeks. Mnuchin explained that he and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows will meet with McConnell and the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to brainstorm ideas for a more targeted relief package. I mean, how many days, weeks, and months do you need to brainstorm? You know, I mean, they know exactly what they're going to do and so forth. So, you know, it is kind of funny. But anyway, lawmakers have struggled to pass additional economic stimulus since March's CARES Act, and but there's very little signs of if they're approaching any kind of finish line here. So we've seen a lot of those stimulus provisions. They've already expired or were depleted over the course of the summer. Some of them were extended through executive orders. And again, the packages that previously ranged was 2.4 to 3.2 trillion. So I don't know why anybody would think that things would be different this time around. You know, it's just not going to happen until you see some pressure on Wall Street. Then you'll begin to, you know, well, maybe we better get something done. But the agency facing mounting scrutiny over how it doled out checks from a $212 billion pandemic relief program has privately directed employees not to use the word fraud in writing if they spot suspicious applications. Workers reviewing requests for the SBA's pandemic economic injury disaster loan program have instead been told by managers to use alternative phrases, such as duplicate. That's according to four people who received the instructions and asked not to be identified, of course. So that always brings in the question, is this real or is it not real information? But knowing about programs, government programs, and how easily they can be changed and given out and so forth, I kind of go along with that idea. The SBA strongly denies that staff processing EIDL loans were discouraged from identifying suspected fraud, and it also added that the SBA takes fraud very seriously and is partnering with its Office of Inspector General and other government agencies to investigate and ensure fraud is prosecuted. So, you know, the story goes on. You know, they try to pick, you know, a little bit of fraud here, a little bit of fraud there. Instead, everything else, the big fraud gets, you know, wiped under the rug and no one is really held accountable. New unemployment filings.
Melody, can you hear me? This is Dave. Hi, it's Dave.
Yes.
On the phone. I know who that is. Hey, sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We had some technical difficulties with Skype on my end, but I found my way in via good old telephonic technology. But, you know, you were talking about this fraud. They mentioned that one of these unidentified managers, that he said fraud is the new F word in the SBA. So I guess it's taking on a life of its own there, despite the anonymity. But it's interesting. I mean, you know, with 3.6 million loans already issued worth close to $200 billion, well, as almost 6 million grants that don't have to be paid back, they total $20 billion. You know, it's a far cry from the SBA's half a trillion dollar paycheck protection program, which relied on banks to distribute the forgivable loans, meant to cover payroll and rent and utilities and similar expenses. But it's funny, you know, talking about several staffers saying they were told to mark questionable applications as duplicates in their internal loan system. So, fascinating goings-on, Melody, in Washington.
Absolutely. Always has and always will be, I suppose. It's just a little more, we just know more about it now than perhaps in the past. But anyway, new employment filings, I had went into a loose indicator of firings across the country, seemed to have leveled off at a devastatingly high point, around 1 million new weekly applications per week. Filings have come way down from their peak. Economist Heidi Shierholz at the Economic Policy Institute said we saw fairly steady, substantial improvement in initial claims through the week ending October 3rd, but since then the improvement has really slowed. She added that is part and parcel of the labor market improvement that we have been seeing in the summer slowing as stimulus fades and as the virus surges, which perhaps is disrupting the economy and labor market. But continuing claims or people who keep receiving unemployed benefits after initially applying have been steadily shrinking, Dave.
Well, part of that may be people rolling off unemployment and returning to work. It's also the case that a lot of Americans have been booted from the program because they've been employed for too long. They simply run out of benefits. And that's what they say in the old world as a big bummer. Instead, they're applying to receive benefits through the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, that so-called PEUC, that offers an additional 13 weeks of support after the traditional 26 weeks have run out. And that program swelled by over a quarter of a million people in that week ending October 31st. Now, the extended benefits program, which is separate, it's available in most states. I believe that was a function of or a creation of the president's in one of his late summer executive actions. It's available in most states for eligible unemployed workers that have exhausted both their regular state benefits and the PEUC. That saw a slight uptick last week as well.
Well, you know, we have this V-shaped recovery going on.
I heard.
Did you hear that yet? We have this V-shaped recovery.
I don't see it. I don't believe it in any event, but I heard.
I only wish it was true. I only hope that it would be true. But, you know, and I'm no fan, you know, folks, I'm no fan of any of these too big to fail banks. And, you know, they're the problem. They're the ones who create the problems. They're the ones who, you know, it's, I mean, you go back to any recession and, you know, since the beginning of our country, and who really is always at fault for creating the problems? It's the banksters. So, I mean, this is no different. So, but, you know, they're still talking about the first quarter of 2021 seeing a contraction. And that was out by J.P. Morgan. This new forecast is a departure from Wall Street's widely held view that the first quarter would be positive and that it would be improving, that we would have an improving economy throughout 2021. Economists say they expect the economy to expand briskly in the second and third quarter. And again, this is all based on vaccine developments. But what's the vaccine going to do to improve the economy? The economy has already been hurt. The vaccine isn't going, it might help, but it's not going to lead to a 100% recovery. Businesses aren't going to open up their doors again, those that have closed and filed bankruptcy, because there's a vaccine. They're done. So restaurants that failed, they're not going to reopen because there's a vaccine. Those that have closed their doors, laid people off, people who have lost jobs, businesses have closed and they can't reopen. Where are these people going to work? Doesn't matter if there's a vaccine or not. So again, you know, there's always, you'll always see some sort of improvement. But how is it really improving these people's lives and the jobs, better wages? You know, so they're talking about the winter being grim, that the economy is going to contract again in the first quarter. The projected first quarter will contract by 1% after a growth of 2.8 in the fourth. I'm guaranteeing you that 2.8 in the fourth is just all based on Christmas. So that all remains to be seen. So, I don't know, Dave. It's and then when you look, I mean, the second quarter they're looking for growth. China is at 6.5% in the third quarter. That's a pretty big spread.
Yes, it is. And those numbers assume a $1 trillion stimulus package.
Yeah.
Likely beginning near the end of the first quarter, which they say could help boost mid-year growth next year. They wrote that it's unlikely to change between 20 and 21. The one thing, that is that the virus will continue to dominate the economic outlook. You go on to say infections in the latest wave are easily surpassing the March and July waves.
And I hear the music. We're heading into the break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit your website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Dave, it's, you know, levity is golden is this next segment, and you titled it The End of the World as We Know It, and it's interesting that when the, I remember, and I do miss interviewing James Corbett, but, you know, he felt he, and when the virus started, the first program, we tagged it, basically, it is the end of the world as we know it. And I do believe that. All things changed. And it will never be the same once the pandemic had started. But this is in reference to something else. And it's interesting. I don't know if you ever heard of Planet X.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a lot of people waiting for a long time for Planet X. So kind of makes me wonder. But why don't you tell the listeners about...
Don't hold your breath for Planet X, but ladies and gentlemen, mark your calendars.
Yeah.
I know. Or tell your children, grandchildren, your nieces and nephews to mark theirs for 2068, that is. In other words, we have 48 more years. David Tholen, who's an astronomer at the University of Hawaii, recently reported on the status of asteroid Apophis during a virtual meeting of the American Astronomical Society's Division for Planetary Sciences. During his presentation, Tholen outlined research that he and his team conducted regarding the path of this asteroid and the likelihood that it will ever strike Earth. Asteroid Apophis was first spotted by astronomers back in 2004. Shortly thereafter, researchers worked out its orbital path and found that the quarter of a mile wide asteroid would pass near to the Earth in 2029, 2036, and again in 2068. Additionally, now, you know, when they say near, I mean, that's normally thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of miles, like, you know, the moon and beyond. Additional studies showed there was little chance of the asteroid striking Earth, thus it was discounted as a threat. More recently, however, Tholen and his team noted that researchers had not accounted for, listen, a new word or phrase, ladies and gentlemen, the Yarkovsky effect. And that means by which rays from the sun strikes one side of an asteroid. As the heat radiates away from the asteroid, a small amount of energy pushes back against the asteroid, forcing it to turn slightly. Whoa. Tholen and his team calculated that the Yarkovsky effect is pushing Apophis to one side enough to force it to drift by about 560 feet a year. It's the equivalent of almost 2 foot football fields long. They next applied that bit of knowledge to the math describing Apophis's orbit and found that the drift is changing the course of the asteroid in a way that will bring it closer to Earth. Now, we know thus far there's no indication whatsoever that the asteroid will strike the Earth in 2029 and 2036, but 2068 might be another matter. He suggests that astronomers will have to keep an eye on Apophis as its rendezvous date approaches. Now, as news of a possible threat from Apophis rises, others have pointed out that the human race has made strides in protecting the planet from asteroid strikes. NASA's DART mission, for example, D-A-R-T, scheduled for 2022, will involve sending a spacecraft to an asteroid called Didymos and using it to alter the path of one of its moons. Tola noted during his talk that the study of Apophis, when it passes by in 2029, should give scientists a much better idea of whether or not it poses an actual threat in 2068. As for me, Melody, I'm sticking to the less scary science fiction channel. In any event, ladies and gentlemen, just another reason why you should buy your gold and silver while you can. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
Very interesting. You know, wasn't it what country just recently, maybe it was ours, that sent something to an asteroid that took samples, I believe?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, that's good. Good memory.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember which country.
No, I think it was us. It was unmanned. I don't know if it was just us or if it was in collaboration with any other country. But they did scoop some stuff up. I don't know if this is the Didymos asteroid that they're going to go back to in the DART mission in 2 years, but fascinating times out there in Captain Cook land.
Yeah, I just wonder what all of these, what all the interest is really about.
I know.
So, anyway,
perhaps there's gold up there in those asteroids.
Maybe. So, let's see. Let's talk about global grain markets. And, you know, there's been a crunch, a supply crunch, and it really could also linger past this year. The agricultural markets, you know, they've come back in recent months from the first half plunge, which was bolstered by strong demand from China and smaller than expected harvests that are winding down in some key producers. The CEO of Trader and Processor Bunge, he said that'll set up an acreage battle going forward between corn and soybeans, and it will likely take more than one growing season for the markets to return to a balance or a surplus of inventories, he said. Soybeans prices surged to a 6-year high this week. Corn futures. Corn futures are near their highest since mid-2019, and China has been a rampant buyer of both as the country rebuilds hog herds that was decimated with their deadly swine fever outbreak last year.
Yeah, and coupled with strong demand have been worries that the La Nina weather phenomenon could curb coming harvest in agricultural big countries like Brazil and Argentina. Still, analysts and farmers say there's time for South American crops to improve. The soy harvest in Brazil, which is the world's biggest shipper of the oilseed, could even notch a record. That's despite the abnormally dry start to their growing season. And in the northern hemisphere, where farmers are wrapping up winter wheat sowing, plantings in top exporter Russia are also seen at an all-time high, despite a big autumn drought. And there's no indication that China's imports will let up soon, given the strong yuan and domestic corn prices at multi-year highs. The pace of corn and feed grain purchases in recent months has caught many people by surprise, and China's level of imports may stay a longer-term fixture of the market. Melody?
Well, you know, Brazil has also seen an unrivaled surge in domestic demand for sugar. There's added appetite within the world's largest producer is aggravating woes for, you know, the world that is struggling from shortfalls. Mills in Brazil's center-south region that accounts for about 90% of the nation's sugar production sold almost 10% more of the commodity to the domestic market just from April through October. Most of the additional volume was sold to the industry, and UNICA is still evaluating whether part of the latest data includes sugar for external markets. So regardless, any increases in domestic demand, you know, will threaten the availability of sugar exports, just as the world requests record volumes to address a global deficit. So, you know, these lockdowns that have occurred have changed the way people consume food, while the president's low-income aid program has boosted demand in Brazil's poorest regions, such as the Northeast. Brazilian company sugar purchases jumped 21% this year, Dave, and through September. And
well, now, listeners may be asking, what in the world do these last two stories have to do with gold and silver? Well, directly, nothing, but indirectly, a whole lot. I mean, they could have a big impact on inflationary pressures. Here and across the world. Now, we're not big producers of some of these things, but we're certainly big consumers of these commodities, sugar.
Especially sugar.
Yeah, we are a food-buzzed nation, for sure. Now, most of the sugar-consuming industries, from soft drinks to processed tomato products, demanded more of the sugar amid rising sales. People and families are consuming soda in 2-liter bottles instead of the cans as it was before the pandemic. And crystal sugar spot prices at mills in Sao Paulo, Brazil, jumped 45% this year to a record high amid strong exports and low domestic supplies. Now, if the impact of COVID on Brazilian sugar consumption is less than previously anticipated, as is the case in the U.S., interestingly, the country could have less exportable surplus next season. And here's that kicker, ladies and gentlemen. That will mean a rise in prices here in the U.S. Futures in New York jumped to a 3-year high earlier this week as France slashed its output estimate because of drought, while the Atlantic's strongest storm this year has once again threatened crops in Central America. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Inflation pressures.
Absolutely. Get your sugar now. If you're doing any baking through the holidays, get your sugar now. There'll probably be a lot of baking on. Is if people are staying home, what else is there to do? So there'll probably be a lot of extra baking this year, I would expect. So Pardon?
Here come the pounds.
Well, I'm not just talking about sugar, but, you know, I bet a lot of your spices could disappear. Doesn't take long for, you know, have a little bit of an influx in one particular type of spice for it to be gone through the whole season. Your almond paste, your almond, but you know, just, you know, your apple pie spices and so forth.
Yeah,
so don't wait until the last minute. Go ahead and get that now. I don't know how much time do we have. Oh, we have enough for this article. Tyson Foods, they suspended a couple of managers in an Iowa meat packing plant, and they were accused in lawsuits of betting on how many workers would be infected in a virus outbreak earlier this year. I mean, really? More than 1,000 of the 2,800 employees at the Waterloo, Iowa pork processing plants were infected with the virus. The facility temporarily shut down following a sustained campaign by local county officials. At least 5 workers at the plant died in the outbreak, according to 2 wrongful death suits, lawsuits that were filed against the biggest U.S. meat producer. But these managers were setting up a betting pool. You know, sometimes what's wrong with people? Come on. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's a show of, I don't know what it's a show of. I mean, it's one article that should upset people, but there's so many other things out there also that should outrage people, and it's not happening. And people are getting outraged at all the wrong things, and the things that people should be outraged at go, you know, right by, and no one pays any attention to. So, I don't know, Dave. Okay. We really do live in a strange, strange world. But what's this about biofuel supplies?
Well, biofuel supplies, the pandemic having a big impact on it every day. Nico Del Rosario oversees 9 trucks that crisscross Southern Cal, weaving through alleys behind shopping malls, restaurants, and a tortilla chip factory to pick up cooking oil drained from fryers. The grease is filtered at his Anaheim plant, and leftover bits of food before the remaining liquid is sold to refiners who turn it into biodiesel. That must be a lucrative business in a state that offers generous subsidies for using scrap oils to generate fuel. Both the pandemic restrictions hurting restaurants across the state, Del Rosario's daily intake has fallen 40% in pre-pandemic days to about 15,000 gallons a day, even as orders keep coming in. Here's the thing, oil refiners face an uncertain future for their fuels, and many are investing billions to convert refineries into renewable diesel plants that process discarded fats rather than crude oil. They're now racing to secure the materials needed to feed the plants, putting some projects in jeopardy of being abandoned. Turns out the California Melody is among the world's biggest markets for renewable diesel, in part because of a decade-old subsidy program designed to lower emissions and thus that gross smog that we used to see and occasionally still do in the big cities out there. So there you have it.
Alrighty, we're heading into the break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody, this third and final segment, while she finishes up with some client businesses. Our latest What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, which is out as we speak, is about gold. Particularly its recent price fluctuations and its positive outlook for 2021 and beyond. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs, as well as our American Survival newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins, the at sign, dgscoins, one word. So, the world's central banks have been buying gold for years, and that trend could drive up the price well over $2,000 next year, according to more than one expert. We know the biggest problem is the ever-growing pile of public debt, which could be exacerbated by inflation next year. Noble Gold founder and CEO Colin Plume says that central banks will have to bear the brunt of government generosity. They've already been doing that a lot so far this year here in the United States. But also in places like Europe, Japan, and elsewhere. Now, they'll have to do that by covering the cost of the multiple stimulus packages that have subsidized workers who've needed relief to survive and businesses that just haven't been able to function during the lockdowns. However, much of that money will still need to be paid back. And that causes major challenges for central banks, such as higher inflation, and higher interest rates. Now, according to Plume, 2020 is the second highest year on record for gold buying by central banks. That's a trend that started picking up momentum in 2018. This year, central banks have already bought 651 tons of gold, and more central banks have been buying gold for its diversification benefits. That's pushed annual bank demand to its highest level, in fact, since 1971. Plume explained the most obvious countries adding gold to their reserves include Russia, China, Poland, Turkey, and Kazakhstan. Oh boy, we know who's been up to no good. Borat. Other countries such as Poland and Germany have begun to repatriate their gold from other countries where it's been kept for safekeeping. Plume added that the main reason central banks want to hold gold is because of the stock-to-flow ratio. That compares the newly mined gold supply, the flow, with above-ground stockpiles, the stock. He said newly mined gold keeps getting added to the stockpile by about 1.5% a year. In other words, he says that gives gold a natural inflation rate of about 1.5%. If gold were money, Plume says, it would be physically impossible to duplicate the rate at which the printing of fiat currency takes place. Gold is finite, and as more currency is printed, it becomes more valuable. Gold, that is. Central bankers know this. So in anticipation of their stepped up money printing, they buy gold as an offset. It's a simple matter of supply and demand. Now, Plume points out that with the national debt hitting a new high of $27 trillion, it's simply unsustainable at some point to keep printing more money. Well, we haven't seen that just yet. But for this reason, Plume expects the price of gold to climb above $2,000 soon and stay there starting next year. Now, RBC analyst Christopher Lowney, also think gold's story is still evolving. He noted that gold's price has corrected recently because of news about a successful COVID vaccine. He pointed out that 2020 has been a year of uncertainty, which has included the pandemic, global economic crisis, heightened political tensions, and plenty of other drivers that have been positive for gold. But better than expected data from the Philadelphia Fed showing optimism in the manufacturing sector has helped to keep pressure on gold prices more recently. Yesterday, the Philly Fed said its manufacturing business outlook fell to a reading of 26.3 this month, down from 32.2 in October. However, the data significantly beat expectations, as consensus forecasts were calling for a reading of around 22. The report said the survey's future indexes also moderated this month, but suggests that growth is expected to continue over the next 6 months. The survey also showed surprising growth in the labor market. The number of employees index more than doubled to 27.2 from October's reading of 12.7. Now, positive for the gold market, inflation pressures are also on the rise. The report said the prices paid to the prices paid index shot up more than 36% from October's 28.5 to November's 38.9. And even though the markets have appeared to be resilient, Lowney doesn't believe investors have gotten over their fear. In fact, Lowney sees gold's recent trend as a reset of gold-related pandemic expectations, a repricing of stimulus expectations by gold investors, a realignment of inflation fears, and a shift in mindset around post-election political uncertainty. He said that reset could help gold find a new equilibrium, and noted that even after the first shipments of the vaccine, there will still be challenges in distribution and uptake, which means the health crisis is not going to end right away, if in fact it ends anytime soon. Thus, Lowney sees a potential high price for gold in 2021 of $2,608. That's way above its current price of $1,874 as of 2 p.m. Eastern Time today. It's a good time to be buying gold and silver, ladies and gentlemen. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. Again, be on the lookout in your email boxes for our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. Now, the other day, Yelp released its latest economic average report. It revealed business closures across the country are increasing as a result of the pandemic's economic toll. As of August 31st, almost 164,000 businesses have indicated on Yelp that they've closed. That's a 23% increase since just mid-July. Yelp also measures businesses whose closures have become permanent. That number has steadily increased over the past 6 months, too, now reaching just shy of 98,000. And that's 60% of closed businesses that won't be reopening. Overall, Yelp's data show that business closures have continued to rise, with a 34% increase in permanent closures since mid-July. Yelp's September report marks 6 months since March 1st, the date that Yelp considers to be the beginning of the business crisis. Now, in order to gather closure data, Yelp monitors changes in business hours or descriptions on its app, offering an immediate localized view of the impact the pandemic has had on small businesses. So, you know, they note, despite the hard hit that small businesses have taken, we've seen that home, local, professional, and automotive services have generally been able to withstand the effects of the pandemic better than other industries. In fact, home and professional services like landscapers, contract lawyers, they're all seeing a much lower closure rate than, say, clothing stores and even home decor businesses. Auto and towing services also reported a relatively low closure rate. Yelp said consumers still need these services. Through the rise of virtual consultations and contactless or socially distant services, these businesses have been particularly resilient during this time. Yelp's confirmed that throughout the past 6 months, restaurants, bars, and nightlife overall have been hit the hardest by the restrictions brought about by the pandemic. 32,000 restaurants have closed as of August 31st. And the number of restaurants forced to close permanently is just slightly above Yelp's total average at 61%. Yelp has also noted that businesses already well suited for takeout, like pizza places, coffee shops, delis, are also treading water better than other types of restaurants. But the types of restaurants with the highest closures are breakfast and brunch places, sandwich shops, and Mexican restaurants. So remember them, ladies and gentlemen, on your takeout nights or days. Bars and nightlife venues have also seen a large impact from the pandemic. It's a sector that can't adapt as easily to outdoor dining or takeout. Their rate of permanent closures has increased 10% since July, and overall it's now sitting at 54%. Retail saw a very similar increase. Permanent closures total of 58%. Hawaii's had the most number of closures, followed by California, Nevada, Arizona, and Washington State. Ultimately, Yelp's data show that Main Street is still feeling the economic impact of the pandemic, and many states and areas of business may not see any recovery soon. So, staying with the business here for a moment, we're reading that some of the U.S.'s largest corporations, including McDonald's and Walmart, employ thousands of workers who receive aid from federal assistance programs like food stamps and Medicaid. That's according to the findings of a recent Government Accountability Office report commissioned by the U.S. Senate. The nonpartisan watchdog agency, GAO, their analysis of data came from the Census Bureau, as well as 15 state agencies in 11 states. They found that millions of full-time workers rely on government assistance to make ends meet. The report focused on Medicaid benefits, as well as recipients of the food stamps program, now known as SNAP. Walmart ranked among the top four largest employees of SNAP and Medicaid benefits in the states whose data were included in the report. Walmart employs an estimated 14,500 workers who receive food stamps, according to GAO. McDonald's was also listed in the top five for at least nine states. Looks like they employ about 9,000 workers who receive SNAP assistance. Other notable big companies appearing in the GAO report include Amazon, Kroger, Uber, and FedEx. Now, in a related story, in case you missed it, Starbucks is giving all U.S. employees a raise of at least 10%
that will go into effect on December 14th. Well, the pay increase includes a 10% raise for baristas, as well as supervisors and cafe attendants that were hired on or before September 14th. An 11% raise for employees that have worked with the company for at least 3 years, and a 5% pay increase for all starting salary rates. The company will also increase the premium that Starbucks pays above minimum wage in all of its markets. This isn't the first benefit Starbucks has announced for its employees during the pandemic. In March, the company announced a temporary $3 raise per hour for all employees during the crisis. The company also added a mental health care benefit in March. And let's see what else is going on in the world. We covered a very good part of our agenda today. Just going to follow up a little bit here in the Starbucks story. We did see back in April, just at, as the pandemic was initially in coming to in full-blown status, Starbucks committed to donating $10 million to its employees who were affected by the pandemic. You know, Starbucks employees have been vying for these pay raises a long time before the pandemic began. Multiple online petitions signed by thousands of baristas are still circulating online demanding the company raise their starting wages to that magical $15 an hour. Well, listen, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to today's program. Melody and I will be back on Monday. I'm Dave Allen. Been good talking with you. Have a good weekend, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye.